Welcome to this week's episode of the Space Explored Podcast. I am Seth Kirkowski. With me this week is Derek Wise. Welcome back, Derek.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So we had an interesting beginning of this week, as well as a few other news items that popped up throughout the last week. And one thing, well, we're still not 100% certain if it did fly because we didn't see it. So there could be a whole conspiracy theory about if SN11 flew or not, but we'll never know because there's no footage of it pretty much. But apparently, according to sources within SpaceX, SN11 did fly yesterday.
I did hear that as well.
We've been waiting. So this has been a long delayed process for getting the Starship SN11 flown down in South Texas. They've had delays, nothing public, but pretty certain delays to the spring break, engine issues, needing more static fires, weather.
And most recently, they couldn't launch on Monday because an FAA inspector wasn't there in time.
A new thing that they have to do now for these launches after the issues with SN8, because they didn't apparently launch with permission or something, which you seem like they would actually do, but guess not. They need to have a safety inspector from the FAA. Apparently the instructor is from like Florida or something. There was definitely two sides of the argument going on about who was at fault. There were definitely some articles written that I thought should have opinion in front of them rather than, you know, anything else. Apparently the story goes is that the instructor was there for the week before and
the inspector,
the safety inspector. Sorry. What did I say?
Instructor.
Oh, maybe he also would instruct. SpaceX might need an instructor too. Sometimes
they might. From time to time, that's
he
for
was
sure.
apparently, or they were apparently there for the week before. And, after the Friday's attempt to do a stack fire and then flight, didn't happen. He went back to, I think it was Florida.
He went back to his home.
He went back home.
They were under the impression that it wouldn't be flying for a while. They were thinking most likely this week it wouldn't be flying.
Yeah.
But
apparently he got an email saying he had to go back, and he was with his family on a Sunday night, you know, like FAA, the government, they don't work on weekends. I was a government contractor. The FAA very, very much does not work on the weekends. So he didn't get there in time on Monday by the time they had to get ready for it. So, they were like working on some of the flight termination stuff and all of a sudden like just road back open. And so, they weren't able to fly then. And some Elon threw shots at the FAA, FAA threw shots at SpaceX. Anyway, he eventually got there. So, which
Tuesday,
I woke up very early Tuesday morning to watch the Today Show.
I was excited to see that live stream. I was looking at all the different people out there with their streams. I was seeing the fog.
So I woke up early. So Elon tweeted that they're going to retry again 8 a.m. the next day. I said. Yeah, right. Whatever. not going to happen. You're not going to fly at 8 a.m. And there was another announcement, which we'll talk later about, that was going to be on the Today Show. And that's at 7 a.m. my time. And so I woke up at like 6:30 to get ready for this. It ended up being like the guy who, I guess, whoever runs the website updated it. And like today didn't even get their exclusive because it just got updated like an hour before the TV show. They even did it pretty much. So I'm like, well, whatever. And then I'm looking at it, and all of a sudden I see like tweets, and I'm like, oh, like NASA Space Flight's live. Oh, every astronaut's live. I'm like, oh, they're doing fueling? What? what is this? I go to the live stream, and I don't see anything because there's some fog, which is pretty prevalent in South Texas. I drove through it.
You look at Tim's stream, and it's like, okay, they can see like one tree that's relatively close to the house, and then it's just a blanket of white. There's no visibility at all.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking they would launch.
They're not going. Of course they're live. The window open. They always go live at the window opening. It's not gonna fly until like midday, which they could have waited till midday to fly.
They could have waited.
There was no fall. They could have just waited, three more hours, pretty much. And yeah. It would have been fine. But.
Well, it still might not have been fine.
Well, no.
But at least we would have been able to see it.
Happened, but we at least would have been able to get really good footage of it, pretty much. So, all of a sudden, they go live at, T minus 4 minutes, because they say they go live at 10 minutes beforehand, but they never do.
It's Starship. They cut it as close as possible.
It's literally the lowest.
They don't need to be live for long.
Yeah, it's literally the lowest effort possible from SpaceX to get a live stream going, which is fine. So we get
at least we get a live stream from them.
We get John and Sprucker. I'm completely content with this. So we start counting down, and even in the NASA Space Flight and Everyday Astronaut have gotten a deal with SpaceX to put their closer cameras on their property, pretty much. Before that, the closest you can get was either SpaceX, which had pad cameras, or Lab Padre, which was across the street. So finally, we have these are not far away. These are relatively close cameras. SpaceX is around the pad. You can't see anything from any of these
you
cameras.
You still couldn't see it, and they were right next to Starship.
And I'm not surprised that it's at 8 a.m. and it's foggy. I remember getting in the South Padre for SN8 at 7 a.m. and couldn't see anything. You literally cannot see 10 feet in front of you. So I'm not surprised you can't see anything with these cameras. And I'm it's not launching. All of a sudden you see a little bit of orange at T minus zero, and it doesn't stop, and it starts counting up, and you're all right, I guess the guy said liftoff, and it's still going. So
yeah,
I guess it
launched. So we basically got, as far as views of Starship, we got the cameras attached to Starship, and those were pretty much the only good views. I remember seeing at least two different ones inside the engine bay, and then there were some.
There was actually a little
down
bit
the side.
There was
some in the tank.
There was some that were actually in the tank, which I didn't even catch because the stream kept going in
and
out.
It was so brief.
Yeah,
and I saw people speculating, did they mean to show this to us?
So,
and other people were saying, no, they must have just been trying to find any camera with a view.
So I actually, I think this was in a Scott Manley video, because actually there's a reason why, I've talked with Jamie who works there at SpaceX. We talked about some stuff outside, so I can't really go into that, but there's not just a switcher with cameras. The person who's with the camera you see, it's not going from a switcher board you see at a news broadcaster. It's just a rotating camera feed. So they don't choose when they get to see something. It just rotates through the engineering cameras. This is how it is on the Falcon 9. So I assume this is how it is on Starship. So, and eventually they go to the tank and they go to other spots, which they can't show on stream because it's just engineering cameras and they got to show some of that stuff, and it's all too much bandwidth to send down eight different camera views, pretty much. To just send down one rotating camera view, and so they have to have a switcher that switches away from the tank view and all this. Apparently the person missed it on Starship. So
interesting. I did not know any of
this. Scott Manley talked about it on one of his videos. It was a video about an amateur guy decoding SpaceX's telemetry downlink, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's
how you get to see the third, SpaceX won't show you that because it's technically ITAR restricted, I think, some parts of it, but they don't scramble their telemetry apparently. So you can just pull it. Any amateur who is smart enough to figure it out can just pull it. Now, I do not suggest, I've done bit shifting before, which is literally where you're just flipping zeros and ones. I don't even want to put that on my worst enemy. It's terrible. Just trying to get a bunch of zeros and ones in the data, it's the most terrible process ever. So, we just got a few camera views. You still can't see anything because, it's just fog everywhere. So you just see parts of the rocket, and it did pretty well on the way up.
It appeared to do well
going up. It did the flip. The stream was going in and out, so we actually didn't really get to see much of
it. I was surprised by, I guess, maybe the fog kept causing issues.
I assume that's probably what it was.
Or maybe they didn't have a good camera choice at the time from onboard Starship, and they were like, well, we don't want to just show them. Who knows?
This might just be how the stream is, and so like it might just be really choppy, but they have the ground cameras to go off of. So
yeah,
that's probably why it wasn't so great. They didn't have any ground cameras. Now, we don't know publicly, but it would make sense that they have thermal cameras. So a lot of people were saying like, this is not safe. How are you launching in zero visibility? One, and like some people saying the FAA going to kill them for this. The FAA signed off on it. Like the safety inspector was there and said, go ahead, launch. So like he had an opinion whether or not they could launch or not. So yeah, I assume they got to have thermal cameras. Like there's no way they don't. They're not. It's SpaceX. They have the money for it. So
yeah, but I mean, it went up to its altitude and the engines did their sequenced shutdown. Yep. It moved to the belly flop maneuver. And it felt like that for a while. We got some nice views of cameras looking down the body of Starship over those flaps.
Those are always my favorite views. Those are like the greatest.
I love those views. Mm. And then we see right as they go for engine ignition and then nothing.
Yeah.
And the clock is frozen.
At T plus 5 minutes and 49 seconds. I was texting with Zach and Daryl. I just like my internet goes out because at the same time, like, because there was no views for like NSF, NASA Space Flight, or Everyday Astronaut to go off of, they just were showing SpaceX's.
Yeah.
So to me, it looked like all of my internet just went out. Like, it's all three streams just stopped.
Yeah, I thought of that at first, then I started scrubbing through the live stream and I was like, oh no, for the last 20 seconds, it's been this exact frame. And
John Isberg just came out and goes like, well, we've had another exciting test of Starship. And I'm like, yeah, he did. Apparently, it is...
It exploded in midair.
It is, there's a Jeff Dunham stand-up joke. I won't go through the whole joke because it's not necessarily that PG, but it's over there, over there, and up there. So
yeah, so we didn't see any of the explosion from SpaceX because they couldn't see through the fog.
Yeah,
we didn't really see it from anyone else except NSF's cameras were able to capture, and I believe Everyday Astronauts' cameras were able to capture a faint orange glow,
a little bit bigger,
and then there was a little bit of debris coming down, and then. I know Tim's cameras, those cut out, and they were extraordinarily worried that the debris that was surrounding their cameras as it hit the ground had damaged it because they certainly didn't have a view and they couldn't see it.
Yeah, and NASA Space Flight was like similar. Their camera was still like alive. I think like their solar panels they use for power got hit or something like that, or close to. So like they had like I think they said like they had no power going anymore, but they could still like they would still have battery power, and so they downloaded it. You could see like it got hit, like it moved.
Wow!
Like it went from like, showing one different view to a little bit different view. And poor Yucca plant got just chopped right in half. It was these two plants. I think they're yuccas. They were calling them on the stream yucca plants or yucca plants. Yucca plants, I think they're called.
Yucca. Yeah.
It just a piece of debris just slashes it in half and falls over. And I'm like, oh, poor, it didn't even have a chance.
But I mean, it was just surrounding the cameras. It was amazing to see that video.
I think the closest part of the rocket that other than just like stray debris that landed on the landing pad, but I think the biggest chunk of the rocket that landed near it to the landing pad were the engines. But there was only two of them that were on the landing that were even close to it. The third was like on the road.
I believe Elon tweeted that the crater was right on target.
Yeah. And which more is like a code word for saying that nothing else got damaged.
Yeah.
Like,
because I saw
it was everywhere.
There were some aerial photos of the aftermath of this after all the fog had cleared when it would have been a perfect time for them to launch and everyone could have seen it. And if you see where the cameras are, and they're just massive chunks of steel entirely around.
Usually, the last three launches, they've all, you know, exploded at the pad, and they're usually contained to like there might be a few pieces in the floodplains across the road from it, but they're usually like contained to the pad inside the walled off area. Some smaller pieces on the road. I was watching the lab podgers afterwards, and they were panning around, and just like the road was closed until like 5 o'clock today because there was that much debris over the road and like across the floodplains that in the dunes that are there.
Yeah, not just over the road and across the floodplains. There are people at Isla Blanca Park
that were
getting pieces of these, I believe, thermal blankets, which they're very light debris, so they were probably carried by a breeze a bit.
They were most likely not even landing from the explosion. They were from the when they were up in Apogee. That's most likely where they fell off.
Okay.
If it doesn't matter like how light it is, how much wind there is. If it blew up, it blew about a kilometer above the pad, maybe like a half a kilometer. In no way would have made it. It's Blanca. That's like so far away. It's like miles. So then most likely that happened on ascent, which is actually kind of concerning as well. It's not like that's this stuff isn't going to like fall and hit you in the head and kill you. Like it's going to flutter down like little pieces of like paper pretty much. So it's not going to be fine, but it's not definitely good.
Yeah, it's definitely not good, especially with they're surrounded by wildlife areas. There has been, or there is, I'm not entirely up to date with the environmental reviews going on for Starship, but there have definitely been environmental concerns that were brought up towards the Starship program and the noise that it's producing. And it definitely is not a good look to have debris spread all over the place, because I even saw a tweet from someone who actually works on a state wildlife area right near there. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, SpaceX, when are you going to let me go back to work? Because it's just a picture of this field entirely full of debris and that he was unable to access because they were still working on opening the road.
Yeah,
he was trying to do field work, actual field research.
They weren't allowing to do anyone down the road because, one, like, who knows how many pieces of metal are just flying around. They don't want to, like, have people, like, just the public get their tires flat, probably, for pieces of metal. And, like, I felt bad for some of the SpaceX employees having to clean up that debris because on one of the Lab Padre streams, you just, like, the guy's just, like, bent over like one big piece of metal with like a whole bunch of other pieces of metal on top of it, dragging it across the plane to try to get it back. And I'm like, God, that's gotta suck for how they're gonna get all that debris back. Those are some big pieces. So
I believe there might have even been some damage to the road itself from
I wouldn't the be chunks. Surprised. Because if a raptor, I didn't see the image, but apparently a raptor was on the road. That's a pretty dense chunk of metal is going to hit that. And speaking of that, it's a good time to bring that up. Shortly after the flight anomaly, we can call it, Elon tweets that he's donating $30 million to Brownsville.
That definitely is a good luck when you're going to shut off access to a public road, public beach, and kind of destroy parts of it.
It probably was planned well before this.
I'm sure Elon, that something here was in the works.
Elon would just drop $30 million whenever he wants, though. He's pretty loaded.
I feel like the anomaly definitely played into the timing of the announcement at the very least.
So Elon Musk is going to be donating $20 million to the Brownsville schools and then $10 million to the city for revitalization of the area. It is a relatively lower income area. It's not like terrible, I don't think. I don't know what the crime rate is. My dad, he was in the Coast Guard, and he was stationed down there for a while. Back then, there were some pretty decent cartel issues. I don't know where that stands today. That was like 30 years ago. But
Well, Elon was also encouraging people to move down to the Brownsville area, get them to come to South Padre Isle. He seems to want to build up this place.
Yeah, he wants to get like, is it like 10,000 people living in that area or something like that? I think you said
I'm not sure the specifics.
Huge amount of people in the next couple of years. And he did mention that right now their current operation is like almost fully green when it comes to power and water and waste and all that stuff. And they're planning on keeping it that way when they start expanding. Where they're going to expand? No idea, because I can't imagine they're going to expand Boca Chica Village for residents, because that just would be a pain in the butt to evacuate that many people for flights. But I'm looking forward to see what it is. They have a Tesla shop down there now. Like, Austin Bernard has talked about it so many times, how like SpaceX has changed that whole area. So
I think this also brings up, I believe this has been addressed before, but like this, the amount of debris that spread across here brings up the question of when will that road end up getting closed? Because SpaceX has had a reasonable public perception now. Will this specific event change it? I know that at least the few people whose work was affected by not being able to do that research surely have had some change of opinion of SpaceX, but how much will this affect the public idea of them?
Yeah, I think we're getting closer to a road closure down there, to like just a permanent road closure, which would suck, because the access you get in that area as media is just insane. It's awesome. So
as anyone, not just media,
anyone. Just like put the public, you know, they'll just drive down, park, you know, next to it. Maybe it will get
on the opposite side of the road. Notably, don't think you can park on that side of the road.
Yeah, you can only park on the opposing side of the road. You will get yelled at. Though apparently, if you drive a Tesla, you can pretty much get away with anything down there. Like, I have someone I was down there with, like, he had a Tesla, and he goes, like, yeah, they're like waving me in the park inside the area. They didn't know that I was like media rather than like. So, but I can see definitely it being more like they restrict the times it open. Like, it's a public road, but it's only open so much a week, you know, like on the weekends and Friday afternoons or something. But
yeah, something else worth bringing up as far as access and security is, with it being so close, there was actually someone very recently who broke onto SpaceX property and went right underneath a Starship. And
yeah, they definitely started one. They definitely need the footage upper and photos, because being down there, it's not that hard. There's no gate that closes up. You could literally, especially in the launch pad area, and when I was walking around, I didn't know if I was on SpaceX property or not. But like, you could definitely just walk over to the orbital. Probably not anymore, because they've done a lot since I've been down there.
People just need to be responsible. Keep their distance, respect the access you have,
and walk onto SpaceX property. Don't walk on private property. Period. Especially something where there's condensers and pressurized tanks that. You don't know what could happen there, because pressure is not great. Anything pressurized is not good. So, there's definitely going to be some restrictions to that area. I'm hoping that maybe if they do restrict it, they can at least, the city could allow some media people down there to camp out, because it would be a shame if, like, they just shut it all down. And we have to, like, peer in from Isablanca with our 800-millimeter, massive telescopes to see anything.
Yeah.
So this happened at 8 a.m. yesterday on the dot. Another thing that was announced at around the same time yesterday was more SpaceX news, which seemed to be overshadowed by the events of Starship. But the final two members of the Inspiration 4 mission were finally announced.
Yes.
So the two members that were added were Chris Zimbrowski. He was the Zimbrowski. He was the Generosity seat. So he was the one who – there was a little controversy, but it's not that big of a deal to me. His friend was picked, and then he had obligations to where he couldn't that's like my worst nightmare. If I could go, but then I had like applications where I couldn't go, like it was like over my brother's wedding or something, that would suck. But his friend was picked, and then his name got selected. He also donated and was like in for the running, and so they picked him. He's a veteran. I don't remember off the top of my head which branch. I think it was Army or Air Force.
I believe he worked in the Air Force, I know he did work on maintaining ICBMs.
Yeah, like he's kind of like the perfect guy. Like he's worked with rockets. He works in the aerospace industry. He's a big, he's a big fan of, he's a member of the aerospace community. So I think that is like, they rocked it out for picking who it was, for this seat, I think. And then for the second seat for the, was it, is it Prosperity, I think it is?
Yes.
Seat, which is, which was how you had to create a ship, ship for, like payment, a shop, and sell some stuff on there as like, and donations, money from that went to be donated to St. Jude, similar to the, generosity seat. So the person who selected was Dr. Cyan Proctor.
And I, yeah, she's a scientist. She notably in 2009 was a finalist for being an astronaut. So she was so close before. She has been on 4 analog missions, which is missions here on Earth where they basically go in simulated environments for extended periods of time.
Is it called High Seas or High Rise? I can't remember what it's called.
High Seas. High Seas. And that's to
down in Hawaii.
Investigate food strategies for long space flights.
It's basically like a it's a little area that NASA has set up for like, it's like a simulated Mars pretty much environment pretty much. I would love to go do it so badly. I would actually like love to do that. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and so they announced that on the Today Show. Well, it got just updated. They just released it on their website 2 hours before. I think they announced it publicly on Today. So, yeah, and that's the final two members. So, yeah, you have Haley Arsenault and Jarek Eisenman, who will be joining those two.
How fitting a group.
I was, like, kind of concerned for a little bit. Like, who are they going to pick? Especially the person at random. Like, is it – we might just get a really, like – weird group, but like I've known of Dr. Proctor for a while. She's a great person. I'm super excited that she's going. The only thing I would say that they could ever prevent would be, it would be great if they would have sent, if like a photographer would have gone with them, because Dr. Proctor's an artist. She paints, I think she does. I think it's painting. And right, is that true? She's some sort of, I know she's an artist of some sort. I don't remember if it's
paint. I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I'm super excited to see what she comes out of it. I hope she does some sort of like art project when she comes back. And
yeah. Speaking of photographers though, they did all, John Krause is apparently a photographer for them.
Yeah. So I think there was like, kind of like, there was some behind the scenes bets on who was being picked, because a lot of the members in the media group were putting their hats in the ring to join the Inspiration 4
yeah.
Mission. So there was Emily. I always miss how to pronounce her last name, but she was a Netflix show, Emily's Wonder Lab, which is weirdly a great show even for adults. and John Krause and a few others photographers were kind of like taking bets, and I'm like, I don't know, John Krause has been a little suspicious on the social media, so maybe he's getting selected, and eventually it turned out he's going to be one of the main photographer for the mission, which is, I'm super excited for him. I mean, I'm assuming he just went up on the, they were up on the, at KSC, was it Tuesday? Today's Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Monday, they were up there Monday, apparently. Thomas Burkhart tweeted, I don't know where he got the source. He didn't tweet the source, but apparently, they were up on the gantry, up on the access arm on LC-39A. Which was kind of cool. There was some video of it on Today, and as well as the press conference that they did yesterday as well, which was kind of cool. I'm sure he got up there, which to my knowledge, the only other like really photographer that's gone up there is Ben Cooper, who is, by the way, the man.
yeah.
He's like, if there's a photographer that is like the photographer above all photographers, it's Ben Cooper.
It is Ben Cooper.
So for launch photography, that is. So yeah, that is Inspiration 4 new crew members, and they knocked it out. Like I can't really complain about it. I'm super excited to see this mission. I get my shirt in a little bit. I'm super excited for my shirt. Not gonna lie,
I'm excited for this mission. It's gonna be a good one.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the seeing this one fly, and I'm super excited to see who was selected. Oh,
so also on Tuesday during that live event, they shared that the capsule, they will be flying in Resilience, but
which is already which is currently on the station right now with the Crew One.
Yeah.
Yep.
But rather than having a hatch, they will instead be replacing it with a massive glass dome window.
Yeah. So on the,
that
on the top
they can
of
look
the,
out.
Yeah. It's kind of smart. Like, I didn't see it coming. But then, like, as soon as they announced it, like, oh, that makes sense. So on the top of the dragon capsule, there's two ways to get in and out of the dragon capsule. There's a side hatch and the top hatch. A side hatch is what you use on the ground to get into. You walk across to the crew access arm and you get in. The top hatch is what you use to dock with. And since they're not docking with anything, though they are using the same inclination as the ISS, they're just going much higher than it.
Yeah.
They will, which some people were thinking they were going to do polar, but they're using the same inclination of the ISS for the same abort scenarios. They're not docking with anything, so they just took the docking port out, and they're just installing like a little cupola like dome on top, which I'm like, makes sense. This is the reason why I'm not, you know, in SpaceX, because that's just too smart.
Yeah, and the installation of the dome won't stop resilience from being used for any future missions. It'll be refurbishable or replaceable once it comes back,
yep.
So that it can be replaced with docking adapter, yep. And go back to the station.
I'm sure the people who first created the commercial crew program and the commercial crew development program before that, and Charlie Bolden, who was the minister at the time at NASA, and the other people are probably like just sitting there like, hell yeah, we did something. Because the whole point of the commercial crew program was the built to get a commercial space market going. It took a while, but
it's taken a while. It's like we're just about there with people, and I'm so looking forward.
Yeah,
to
all
it.
The people who pretty much said that, you know, you can't put the burden of crewed flight on a private company, it has to be a government agency, we're all proven wrong, because now SpaceX has not just launched crew twice, they're going to be doing it fully commercial with no. Well, I'm assuming they're going to have some training, some help from NASA.
They're going through an extensive training process. They have full 6 months of training. They're doing a lot of stuff, and the thing they were really emphasizing is that they will not be compromising on safety.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing like the centrifuge testing for nominal and off nominal situations.
I would have totally failed that. I've been on mission space
like full duration.
Yeah,
mission
space. I've been on mission space a few times, and I feel like every time I get off, I'm like, yeah, I can fly to space. And when they said they're doing centrifuge testing for off nominal things, I'm like, nope, I would have failed that instantaneously.
Yeah, so they're getting the astronaut experience, and they're gonna be prepared to do what needs to be done in the event of emergency situations. So it's as much as it is a private ride to space, it is not just stepping on board a spacecraft and going up there. It's a lot of preparation, yep. And a lot of knowledge that they need to have before they can go.
Yeah. And I think they definitely got, I mean, with Dr. Proctor being, you know, a finalist for an astronaut group, I think she's
absolutely,
as well as, you know, Jared being a pilot for so many years, and all pretty, pretty solid four people up there that can handle any situation probably that arise. You want to touch on Ingenuity real quick?
Yeah, so Ingenuity is, of course, the helicopter that is on Mars on the belly of Perseverance. So we've been following the developments from landing, and they dropped the debris shield that was protecting it. They moved Perseverance to position in the center of the airfield, and they've rotated Ingenuity to vertical. They've released the two legs that were folded up. And so at this point, it seems like they are just needing to sever the connection and drop Ingenuity to the surface, at which point Perseverance will drive off. They'll do some pre-flight checks. I say some. They're going to do extensive pre-flight checks. And then they are targeting a liftoff on no earlier than April 11th. But notably, we won't actually get any information from that flight until April 12th.
Yeah, so we're getting closer and closer now. So I think it's end of next week, right? Is it 11th? So somewhere around there. I know.
Oh, wow.
7th
that,
is.
Yeah, like, that might be that. I guess that's. Wow, yeah. It's coming up fast.
11th, that's the. Oh, yeah, that's the. I think the 11th is when I'm flying down to Florida. So I'm. Oh, dang, come on. It's got to be during Sun and Fun, of course. So. So yeah, that's happening up in April. The whole almost off is five of their flights will be happening in April pretty much. So it's going to be a really packed, busy couple weeks for the team running the Ingenuity project. One final thing that we
can—it's been good.
Yeah, one final thing we can touch on before we head out of the year is something that we've been kind of—it's been up in the air for the since the January 20th when the new administration came into office here in the United States. Last administration returned the National Space Council back to activeness, I guess, reactivated it. This was something that was originally. Has its roots back in the late 50s, where it was the National Aeronautics and Space Committee, I think. National Aeronautics and Space Committee. And and then it came into the National Space Council around the Reagan administration, and it's kind of like evolved as it's going on, and it was redone last administration by President Trump. When President Biden came in and sworn in, we were kind of not really sure what a space policy was, just for the lack of saying anything really of space. Like between myself and the other reporters that I've talked to, like sent probably close to 100 emails to the administration asking for the transition team, like asking for details, and just none of us got anything. But it's looking like President Biden is looking to do a strong space policy. He is returning the National Space Council, which would be chaired by Vice President Kamala Harris. Not sure that can obviously change. It used to be when it originally was created, it was the president that got moved to the vice president. So it could be moved to a different person if this administration feels like it is appropriate for that, but we don't know the details about that. We also don't know the details about who will sit on it. Obviously, the National Space Council deals with space policy for both defense, intelligence, and science. So it'll be a mixture of those. National Administrator, Department of Defense, Department of Energy, I think, is in there, and a whole bunch of other high-ranking, executive office officials. But there will be. To a source that that was given to us was that there is going to be possibly climate change as well as more earth science members to the council, which is good because obviously that's something that President Biden has issued, that he wants more NASA to focus more on climate change as well as space exploration. So that's kind of a good thing to see that came out of this last week, that that's going to be coming back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a pretty interesting week, especially yesterday. A lot of it happened yesterday.
It's been a week.
I feel like yesterday was just a week, basically.
It really was. It was one thing after another.
Yeah, and I woke up today and I'm like, you know what? I don't even know. Like Sierra Nevada had a – oh, yeah, I forgot. We didn't even talk about this. Sierra Nevada Corporation. We should definitely touch on this just a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
This kind of came out of nowhere because it was like an email blast went out to some media. We weren't on the list. And the presentation got leaked, I guess, to a few people. And it was a private, it was an unlisted stream, but it was a public event. It didn't really make a lot of sense. But Sierra Nevada Corporation, who have been developing the Dream Chaser space plane for like ever, I feel like it was supposed to be crewed. Now it's uncrewed, and they're still working on a crewed version they announced today of the Dream Chaser plane. And they're also going to work on our private space station, which seems pretty cool.
That's a big deal.
It's going to be much larger than the International Space Station. The whole kind of like what I got from the presentation today was they're like, the International Space Station is going to be retired one day, which is fair. Like it is. Mir got replaced. Skylab got replaced. All the Salyut ones from Russia got replaced. International Space Station's, it's starting to show its age. It's been up there for about, just over two decades. So like it's going to get some upgrades, but it definitely needs to be, a change in the next couple decades, I think, to come. And NASA has stated that they want to do more commercial modules and eventually a commercial space station. That's kind of where SNC is coming on that. They don't have funding from NASA yet. but they're hoping for a partnership with NASA as well as other customers to make this huge, it's like a huge space station that they're looking to build that's going to be very heavily needed if they say when the ISS gets retired, which they say currently is funded to 2028, and they want this to be done by then, the handoff.
That's a fast timeline, I will say.
It is actually, it's a lot faster, but it looks like a lot of the it's not like anything that's going to blow your, like they're using expandable modules, like the Bigelow Aerospace, which is actually on the International Space Station now. It's just it comes much, much smaller, and then you kind of like inflate it with air or something. I don't know the full details. Like, I think I'm sure it's much more complicated than just blowing air into it, but it expands to be much larger than what it originally is. So and they already have a test article at JSC as well, which I was surprised to know. That's been going testing for, I think, a couple months now, and that's going to be then moving over to Kennedy Space Center for more testing. So like they've been developing this obviously for a couple years now. There's no way that they haven't. I'm sure they probably picked up a lot of Bigelow people when that company fell through, because this is very similar to Bigelow's plan. So I'm sure this is, I actually feel kind of confident about their timeline. Unless NASA doesn't hop on. If NASA doesn't hop on, then who knows? But especially if NASA hops on.
I feel like I'm just spitballing here, but I think it's in the best long-term interest of NASA to support a commercial side. That way they don't have to do all the funding. Some of it can be provided by other people.
I was sitting in a clubhouse room, and someone talked about, what do you think is going to be the actual biggest step in commercialization of space? And a lot of people are talking about space tourism, which, okay, true. Like, that's like the easiest way to look at it. I view differently. I think space tourism is going to be popular, but not for the normal person. It's going to be for the uber rich. It costs like $250,000 for like a seat on either any of the current space tourism seats, unless you're going on SpaceX for orbital, which is like a couple million, 55 million or something like that. I don't remember. But I think it's going to be private research. You're going to have Axiom building their private module onto ISS, which I think their timeline beats Sierra Nevada, I think, if I remember correctly. And it's going to be a little bit of space tourism, but also commercial research, which I think is going to be way bigger than space tourism. So anything else you want to add there, Derek?
No, I think we've covered a lot of it. It's been eventful. I look forward to the day that the average person can go to space, but yep. I don't see that as being an affordable option anytime soon.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit. Someone also mentioned in the room I was in that when people start building these mega structures in space, there's going to be a need for just the average person to go up.
Well, the average person, I think he wanted to bring up the idea of indentured servitude on Mars that could make it affordable.
Well, yeah, if you're going to have a Mars base, it's going to be like a colony. You're going to need janitors. You're going to need people to build stuff. It happened a lot in the space shuttle. It's easier just to send the researcher up and train the researcher to be an astronaut than to train the astronaut to be a scientist. So it might just be easier just to send janitors and construction workers to Mars and train them to be, astronauts rather than it is to be
everyday jobs in space. That's the day that space travel will be real, when they send you to space not to be an astronaut but to be a janitor, to be a construction worker, yep, to be a teacher
even. I will be a janitor.
That's the day I look forward to.
And with that being said, we conclude this week's episode of the Space Explored Podcast. Thank you everyone for listening this week, and thank you everyone who has been listening the past couple weeks as well. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Overcast, as well as on our website at spaceexplored.com. You can follow me at Seth Kirk, S-E-T-H-K-U-R-K on Twitter. And you can follow Derek at
Derek is Wise, D-E-R-E-K-I-S-W-I-S-E on Twitter, Instagram, pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, I think I'm also Seth Kirk everywhere. Someone was asking me that. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm Seth Kirk on Instagram and on Clubhouse as well. So thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week. See you
next week.